You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Now, I could go bleakly through all the economic numbers of 2008, which remind us of the financial crisis, the subprime mortgage crisis, and all the various crises that have motivated all the various bailouts, adding up to upwards of $1 trillion that the financial sector is attempting to inject into the money supply to save any number of institutions. I mean, I could talk about all that, but I'm actually not going to, because here at The Takeaway, we try to find a silver lining for these kinds of economic stories. And actually, we found one this morning, and I just want to warn you, it's not necessarily good news. Since the various bailouts starting in the 1970s in Washington, there has grown up in the nation's capital an entire bailout industry consisting of lawyers, investors, lobbyists, perfectly positioned to profit from this $700 billion being handed out by the Treasury to various financial institutions. And joining us now to talk about what constitutes this bailout industry in Washington is Eric Lipton, national reporter for the Washington Bureau of the New York Times. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
A lot of the names you cite in your article are very familiar names, including William Seidman from the old savings and loan crisis.
Yeah, there's quite a number of them that are signing up with ventures and which are sort of positioning themselves to profit from this downturn. And they clearly, people say that there are winners and there are losers. And those who know how the system works want to make sure that they're among the winners.
And Eric, what really surprises me about this article is that these guys sound like they're crowing about the opportunity here, not, you know, talking like we are here in America's time of crisis to help it through the dark times.
They are inundated with work right now, and some of them are actually sort of excited that this is a moment when what they do is really in the limelight, and they are so busy that they're working through the holidays to try to get deals done, like the IndyMac. The disposition of the IndyMac assets are going to be apparently announced today, and a number of these players are participating with the private equity funds that are going to apparently buy up what remains of that bank.
IndyMac, of course, a bank that failed long, long ago in, you know, relatively the early days of this crisis. Can you describe how this deal happened? What kinds of deals are these people setting up? What do they look like? They take these assets, they package them in some way, and then sell them off to somebody else. You know, who's the buyer and who's the seller in this case?
There's a whole variety of ways that money could be made. During the savings and loan crisis of the early 1990s, most of the money was made by real estate assets that ended up in the hands of the government that then were resold to people like Sam Zell, the later newspaper guy, who would then resell the properties once the economy improved and make an enormous amount of money. That's going to be happening. But to a lesser extent, perhaps, than the savings and loan crisis, because the government has less of the actual real estate. Another way will be simply making money, helping banks get some of the bailout dollars from the federal government. There'll be lawyers that advise these banks, and that's happening with a number of the former players from the that worked for the federal government during the savings and loan crisis are now advising banks on how they can get a piece of the $700 billion.
And this is a fee-based business for all of these consultants and lawyers. I'm wondering if people like Barney Frank and legislators in Washington have put any kind of limits on the kinds of fees that can be charged by these consultant types.
No, there aren't any limits on that. I mean, there are limits on executive compensation, but not on fees that you can pay to consultants.
I mean, Eric, it kind of sounds, the whole getup sounds a lot like the setup that got us into all this trouble to begin with.
I think it's different. I mean, I think that, you know, really, again, at any time there are winners and there are losers. And it's just that the people who know how the system works see the opportunity right now. And you know, when any time there's a fire sale, there are going to be bargains. And if you know how to buy at a fire sale, you're going to be better off than others. And those people who know how to buy are really getting ready to buy big right now.
Well, I guess part of what you're saying is that it's good there are facilitators here to get some of these assets out of the sort of dumpster and back into the market. And that's good for the financial sector. But have you noticed any apparent or potential conflicts of interest on the part of the kinds of individuals that are positioned to benefit so much?
And one of the things that is a little odd is that while most of these people, almost all of them, have been out of the government for more than the year or two that's required so that they don't have a legal conflict of interest, a number of them are going back to their former colleagues who still work with the federal government, calling them up and chatting with them about, well, when are you going to be letting this real estate go up for sale? And it just seems as if it's a pretty cozy relationship that they know personally the people that they used to work with, and now they're going to try to profit from that.
Well, something to keep an eye on, that's for sure. Eric Lipton, national reporter for the Washington Bureau of the New York Times, talking about a whole new bailout industry back in business in Washington, D.C., in the form of consultants, lawyers, and bankruptcy attorneys. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Today is the third day of Israel's offensive against Gaza in response.